everybody, and welcome to Satsang with G. We are having a few technical difficulties here, so if there's a little extra noise or it's loud, well, what can I say? I'm doing my best to make it all work, but sometimes things don't work quite as well as they do. But anyway, welcome to the show. Welcome to Satsang. It's not really a show. It's an opportunity to take some time on a Sunday afternoon to explore the questions that are most important to us. And I already have a couple of questions lined up in the queue. But I call this show The Mother of All Beliefs. You know, this idea of what we believe is what we experience has been around for actually quite a long time. It's thousands of years old. It had a kind of a renaissance in the late 19th century when there was a whole metaphysical movement that got started, which then kind of petered out. And then, although it's been there in the background, but it had a real resurgence when the book, A Course in Miracles, was published, which gave kind of a new life to all of the New Thought churches, which were floundering at the time. And then it really got put on steroids when the movie The Secret came out, and the whole law of attraction thing. And I wanted to spend a little time with it, because what you believe is really essential to everything. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of different ways that it can be explained. I can explain it from the point of view of neuroscience, because, you know, the brain literally does filter things out. I mean, the cognitive part of our brain, the last part of our brains to develop, is so much slower than the other parts of our brain that it simply cannot handle. It's like, you know, 1/20,000th of the amount of information it can handle. So there has to be some kind of filter by which stuff gets filtered out. So our experience is consciously not overwhelming. We simply could not deal with all of the information that's hitting the nervous system if we had to deal with it all cognitively. We'd all just sit in the corner drooling somewhere because we couldn't possibly process it. You know, but the beauty of it is a lot of things in life don't require deliberation. They don't require thought. They don't require making any choices. But the mechanism by which things are filtered out or let in or even amplified is this thing called belief. And it's way, way more than just on a conscious level. It operates on many, many different levels, including on the level of the energetic, which I oftentimes call energetic assumptions, which is assumptions about the nature of reality, the nature of experience, that are made before you can even talk. That it's the nervous system itself mapping the territory in order to keep you safe. So much of what we experience, much of what we believe, is actually completely off limits to the conscious mind directly, but not indirectly. Because one of the capacities we have is the ability to discriminate and discern. Our ability to deduce and infer things that are not immediately apparent. And, you know, the perfect example of it is the sun going around the earth. That is the way it appears to our senses. And if all we had to do was, you know, deal with the season. Like for millions of years, all we had to do was deal with the changing of the seasons and, you know, sensing differences in the environment. It was not at all important to us to know whether it was or not. That particular perception of it was simply, it was nothing that got examined more in depth. But as we began to develop and mature and become more sophisticated as beings and more conscious, we began to notice that certain things weren't quite fitting. Like there'd be, you know, like I think the way it happened is it was like, you know, the sundial in one part of Greece at noon was showing something different than another part of Greece. They didn't have that kind of communications. They just instantaneous communications, but letters going back and forth referring to it. So, well, wait a minute. wait a minute, shouldn't it be? And so they began to develop this idea that it really was, the earth wasn't flat, and that the earth wasn't, and the sun wasn't moving around it. This is all inferred information, because as far as your sense is concerned, it is. But now, of course, we know exactly the opposite is true. We know that it never was the case. But you see, everything works like that. And for all that time that we believed that it was, we acted as if it was. We made plans as if it was. There was never any question. And so it was literally acted out as the reality. This is really true these days. In the days, modern days of public relations and marketing, which, by the way, are different words for propaganda. I mean, Edward Bernays, the guy who created public relationships, it was actually called public relations, is actually called propaganda, but after World War II and the propaganda of the Nazis was so horrific and everybody became aware of it, they couldn't call it that anymore. So he came up with a nice sounding name like public relations, which is nothing more than propaganda. But in our world, everything is like that. Everything is an attempt to get you to believe something, to want something. So the idea of what I believe or not believe is not innocuous. It is not something that we can take for granted. It's not something we can just dismiss, well, it's not really important. It's literally creating the world in which you live. So to develop a facility, a capacity to be able to use the deepest kind of wisdom, the deepest kind of discernment and discrimination to determine what is actually true and what is my belief about it, is essential to the human being, especially when you recognize that merely experiencing something doesn't make it true. Just because it appears some way to your senses doesn't make it true. And that's a mind blower. That is an utter mind blower. Our perception of things is different than the actual experience, than the actual experience or sensation that's striking the senses. I mean, a young child and a fully grown adult will look at the same phenomena and see very, very different things. You know, some animals can't see color, but they can see in the dark. So their world is completely different from ours. And yet at the same time, we somehow think that that's absolute. Well, there it is. It must be true. It's not. Your perception is completely different from the ultimate reality of it. But it is your perception that guides and governs the life you're living. So the question is, how do we actually discern? How do we actually know? Well, in Buddhism, they have a wonderful phrase, one that I highly recommend to everyone to pay attention to. And that phrase is the great doubt. They even say with great doubt comes great enlightenment, which is simply being aware of things as they actually are. With little doubt, little enlightenment. With no doubt, no enlightenment. If we just go with whatever we happen to be experiencing, the current set of beliefs we have about what we're experiencing, we will remain in ignorance. If we really believe that our perception is the ultimate truth, we are in ignorance. Period. There's no way around it. That is the ultimate ignorance, is to think that what I'm perceiving is an absolute truth and then scratch your head or even get angry that somebody doesn't perceive it in the same way that you do. It's the cause of all of our human misery. It's the cause of all the wars on the earth. There's a beautiful example in the book Gulliver's Travel with the two kings that were arguing about whether the image was black or white, and they were both looking at different sides of the same shield. One side was black and the other side was white, and they were arguing. They were ready to go to war. It is all perception. And if we come to not trust our perceptions and not trust the vehicles, the means by which we have learned how to interpret that, which means we just accept it or we interpret it through the eyes that we were educated with. Until we can break that down, we're really kind of stuck in our illusion. And genuine spirituality, real spirituality, that's its purpose. It's not a change of behavior. It's not, you know, trying to be a better person. It's not trying to be more compassionate. It's not trying to be enlightened. It's trying to see things as they actually are, to go beyond our perceptions to that which is actually true. What is actually true? And that is where that's where the rubber meets the road. Before I talk about that, remember the name of this show is The Mother of All Beliefs. And when you're looking at beliefs, you'll see that, you know, some beliefs are rather peripheral and they're rather flighty. You can look at them for a second, oh, that's not really true, and you can dismiss it, it's gone, right? Others seem to have a little bit more tenacity to them. And it's kind of common, almost common knowledge now, common knowledge at least in personal development, spirituality realm, that when we have a belief about something, when something solidifies, a thought solidifies in a belief, I really believe that to be true, that it will begin to collect other thoughts around it that seem to confirm it, as well as experiences. And the whole, you know, the whole mechanism of the body kicks in, and before you know it, you are literally living a truth that you didn't even believe, you know, 15 minutes ago. But that's how fast, and that's how it works. But there is, at the essence of it, a single belief. What if we could simplify, rather than, you know, I mean, really, what an endless job trying to sort through all of our beliefs, trying to just like, oh God, I mean, they're countless, right? They're endless. It would be a really futile job to try to sort through them all. And fortunately, we don't have to. Fortunately, we can go right down to the essence of all of them, the mother of all beliefs. And that is the belief in a separate self. The belief that you are not one with life. It is so pervasive and so strong, it enters into everything. Look around. Every message you get, every system created by human beings, or every political, religious, and for the most part spiritual, not all of them, economic, political, nationalist, all of them, all have this as their basis, that you and I are separate. You and I are of a completely different substance. There's you there, and there's me here. And because of that arises, immediately from that, two things that are very, very powerful and have been influencing human history ever since this belief first emerged. And that is the fear of death and the fear of lack. Both of those arise out of the sense of being a separate self. If there's no belief in being a separate self, then what is there to die? And what is there to be going to go without? And I really wish you would all take this to heart. Because while we're struggling to survive, we're struggling to try to make things happen, we're even trying to struggle, maybe we're doing it metaphysically or the law of attraction or something to visualize something and hold on to good thoughts. Why? Because underneath it, there's a sense that I'm lacking something, and that this particular technique or idea or metaphysical principle is going to rectify it. And yet, do you notice that right in the middle of that, right at the heart of that, is a sense that I am separate from the thing that I'm desiring? Now, mind you, from the perspective of our senses, that appears to be true. I mean, this body and that body are not the same. You're sitting there, you know, at your computer or on your phone, and you're watching me or listening to me. And it appears as though we are two separate things. Right? But as I started with the example of the sun going around the earth, that's how it appears. But is that what it really is? Is that really what's happening? Are you willing to question it? Are you willing to take that in and say, I know I've always believed that. I know everybody I know pretty much believes that. I know that I've experienced that. But have I only experienced that because I believed it and not because it was actually true? This is, to go here is really quite an act of courage. To begin to question at this level our most fundamental assumptions. Remember, all of modern human history has been based on this, at least in the West. A lot of it in the East, but not particularly. There's been this other thread of not two, of not being separate, that ran through the Hindu tradition in India, and of course in the Buddhist tradition, which eventually became Zen and went into China and Japan and all throughout Asia. But at least in the culture that we grew up in, and certainly the one I grew up in growing up as a kid in the Midwest, you know, that was simply the way it was, right? It was never questioned. That doubt never arose. It did for me when I was 17. It was really quite a remarkable experience. And it just kind of blew me away, especially when I could find absolutely no confirmation for it anywhere. I mean, there was no example of it. It just got out of the blue, this idea that, well, I couldn't really tell whether or not what I was experiencing was actually out there or being generated from in here, which of course means I wasn't even sure what out there and in here were. So I only really invite people to be willing to take a look, to be able to see, to be able to say, what if that isn't true? Because if it isn't true, then I'm not separate from anything, and that my desire to get something is a result of my belief that it isn't already present within me. Now, they hint at that, at the law of attraction. But even the law of attraction and the people and the proponents of it are still more or less mired in this idea that I am separate from it, but I'm going to raise my vibrational level, we're going to make a match, and then it's going to find its way for me. Underneath this is the notion that I'm separate from it. And of course, the basis of that separation is the experience we have of the senses. And really, all I want to do is invite people to look inward. And when I say inward, I simply mean look at the point of perception rather than what is being perceived. You know, if you look out up at the night sky, you see the stars. And the stars appear to be extremely far away. We know they're these huge balls of fire, and they must be very, very far away if they're just a little dot. They even remain a little dot when we look at them through telescopes. And then we learned enough to find out they're very far away, so far away, that what we're looking at, what we're actually seeing, is a light that emitted from that star a million years ago, 10 million, maybe a billion years ago, which means that star that emitted it may have ceased to exist 100 million years ago, and yet to our experience, it's still there. And if you also noticed that you don't have to reach out and grab it, that where you are perceiving it is right here. Right here. It's not out there. My perception is always here and now. Where's the sound of my voice being heard? Is it being heard here, where I'm speaking? Or is it being heard there? Now, we assume that there's a me over here and a you over there. There's a me speaking and then you hearing, and there's this elaborate mechanism so that it's broadcast around the world. But that's not what you actually experience. The only thing you experience is the immediacy of right here and right now, my voice. You assume that this voice is being, is, you know, arising or originating somewhere in another part of the country or the world. But that's simply the belief about it. What if it's not true? What if we are all simply occupying exactly the same space of consciousness? Now, clearly, you know, you could be in Des Moines, Iowa, or Holland. I have one person I'm watching on YouTube from Holland. Is the space in Holland any different than the space here in New York? I mean, really, the space. Take all the objects out of it and just look at the space. Is the space inside a glass different than the space outside of the glass? Yet for some reason, we think consciousness, the consciousness here and the consciousness there, are different. Are they? Or is consciousness like space? I can't just say it. I can't put it out there and say this is what the truth is, because then I'd be no different than anybody else trying to make a statement. I'm inviting you to look. When I look for myself, I discovered that I had absolutely no evidence whatsoever that anything at all, anywhere in the universe, existed outside of my consciousness. No evidence, only belief. And the more I did that, the more peaceful I became, the less afraid of death I became, the less afraid of lack I became. I said, what's up with that? The less I felt like a separate self when I began to feel as if myself was actually the consciousness that was everywhere, and it was no different than you. That there was no difference whatsoever. It's like the same screen has different images on it, so this body appears there, this body appears here, these words appear there, but the space in which the entire thing is happening, I could not find any distinction in it. And if this didn't have a dramatic impact on the way my life felt and the way and the directions that it took, I would just say, well, you know, that's a nice little philosophical idea. But it was far more powerful than that. It was like insights that were like self-evidently true to me. So I invite you to take up the same kind of inquiry, the same kind of inner looking. Have the great doubt. We believe that the universe is made of matter, it's X big, it's got all this stuff in it, it evolved over 13.8 billion years, it's somewhere around, you know, a minute to midnight, human beings appeared, and you know, and we've constructed that consciousness is actually a function of matter. And that is the leading belief, that the organization of matter became complex enough that it gave rise to a self-awareness, or the illusion of self-awareness. They call it an emergent property. And yet, even in some very interesting studies being done in biology, the idea that there is an organizing entity in the middle of any system is suspect. Because if you zoomed in on your body, you'd find a whole bunch of cells, each one of those cells a living thing. And if you really zoomed in on your body, I'd have to ask you, well, where are you? Where's this you? This self, independently existing self, different from me. Where is it? are you nothing but this combination of stuff that is the body, all of these things that are operating together? If you are, then that means that the sense of self that you hold is purely an illusion. It's not true. That there's no such thing as a will or choice or a heart. There's really no such thing as love. They're all really just patterns that are acting out, upon which a sense of self has been projected that doesn't actually exist. In fact, the one projecting it doesn't actually exist. That's what you get with the purely material model. But if you take something a little bit more spiritual, like there's a soul in the body, right? I get, okay, great. Where is it? This localized consciousness or a soul, where is it? Take upon the body and see if you can find it. As a matter of fact, long time ago when they first started doing autopsies, when they actually started, you know, taking cadavers and doing autopsies to find out, you know, well, because, you know, until you cut somebody open, you don't know what's going on inside. They didn't know about organs and things like that. They knew stuff was there. Right? But when they were doing it, they were looking for the person. They were looking for the soul. They were trying to find the soul. It's a little bit like, you know, when you see a kid looking at a radio trying to find whoever's the person singing. Oh, thank you very much. Give me one. Whoops.
That was. I know what it was. What happened to me?
That was my mouse that you guys heard crashing. And I also have another question too. I guess I could go on about this all day long. So I guess I do need to kind of get to some of these questions here. And let me start with in the order they came. I'll get you in a second, Bill. First off is, this one is from Ethereal Gaming. Oh, Ethereal Gaming. GP, you said one of the most important things about the law of attraction is to just feel good. Yes. Yes, I did. And I think maybe you can see why. Because if in fact there's nothing really out there to attract, that there's only things in here to be made manifest, to arise out of you and be given expression within consciousness, that they're made of consciousness, then the substance of which they are made is simply whatever you happen to be feeling. Now that becomes problematic for people because we're so used to having our feelings, our emotions, our sense of self, our sense of happiness be dependent upon the circumstances. We look at the circumstances. If they conform to our expectations, then I'm happy. If they don't conform to our expectations, then I'm not. Then I do everything I can to try to change those circumstances. But if I realize that those circumstances are not external, that they're actually internal, and that the only reason I don't feel happy now and always is because I have projected that happiness on something that I believe to be external to me, and therefore created a belief in lack where there isn't one, I've opened up the door for having a sense of joy that is unconditional, that is simply self-generated, that is simply coming from me. In fact, I begin to tap into what my natural state is. Because if we're not a separate self, and there is no lack, and there is no death, what is there possibly that you could be stressed out about? What could you be afraid of? What could be your worry about anything? What more could you want? What could anything give you that you don't already have? From this perception arises a sense of happiness, a sense of prosperity, a sense of abundance that has nothing to do with circumstance, that is not the least bit moved by circumstance. Doesn't mean circumstances aren't going to come and go. Of course they are, You know, we just had a huge hurricane go through Florida. We have all sorts of, you know, natural things going on as the climate in the earth changes. You can't stop change from happening. Change is the nature of whatever is experienced. You know, if you want to watch a movie on a screen, what you are watching is a constantly changing array of pictures. You're not seeing anything of substance. You're seeing a constantly changing stream of pictures. That's what life is. But are you simply one of those pictures? Is the one watching the picture in the picture? Is the dreamer in the dream? This is the question to ask. So I've made videos about just feeling good and tried to open up to the possibility that you can do it. But as long as our sense of well-being is attached to the circumstances and we see those circumstances as being causative instead of reflective, we will be trapped in a cycle of momentary happiness, mostly deprivation. And even the happiness we have will shift. It'll be gone very shortly. Even that thing you wanted so badly, a week later, a year later, you just can't wait to get rid of it. You know? that dress or that suit that you thought was so great, you know, a year later, you're giving it to Goodwill. It simply has no more meaning for you. And life has got to be more than just the pursuit of one transient, temporary pleasure after another. It's got to be more than that. And if we just look, as I've invited you to do, just look at that which is experiencing the change and ask a simple question. Is that changing? Is that which is perceiving things coming and going, is it itself coming and going? It's a very deep inquiry. Our assumption is yes, because we assume that this belief we have about ourselves is truly who we are. And that belief is always coming and going. I mean, who you believed yourself to be when you were 5, when you were 10, when you were 20, when you were 30, and however far you go. I mean, your whole belief of who you thought you were could have changed last week. So how trustworthy is that? How reliable is that? So our self-image, the picture we hold of ourselves, is constantly changing. If you're going to be happy, if you really want to be happy, you can't anchor that happiness in something that's changing. It's so overtly obvious. You have to anchor it what isn't changing. And to the general thinking of the world, there's no such thing as something that isn't changing, or we imagine there's a God somewhere that's changing. But yet, every day you experience that which is not changing. Just the being itself, the consciousness itself, that which is experiencing. The key to just feeling good is to notice that you have attached your sense of well-being to an external object, and then you're attempting to control that object. The presence or absence of that object determines your happiness. That will never, ever last. Can't. But you do last. And if your happiness is anchored there, happiness becomes intransient. Okay, why don't you patch Bill through now, Don? That would be good. Oh, and put would you type the number into the number again into Skype? I forgot to announce it, and I forgot what it was. So, Don, you there? did we lose you? Hello? Uh-oh.
Hello, G?
Hey, there we are. Hey, man, how are you?
Gee, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. Thank you. Great.
Great. Thank you. You know, while I've been listening to you, I've been trying to form my question, and I need help. And my question has to do with cancer. I was diagnosed with colorectal melanoma cancer a year ago, and I know I am not the cancer, I am not my body, and at the same time, I'm listening to my body, I'm listening to my experience for what needs to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And I assert that this has shown up in my life because of my commitment to enlightenment, and that this is surfacing things that are in the way between me and God, let's say, me and my total realization. And so there's like a causative perception on my cancer. It's like, okay, this body I have has cancer. What is the cause? Because the doctors I'm working with are only treating the symptoms. So I'm going to let them do their best. And, you know, what is my best in terms of healing what is going on in this body I inhabit? So I'm not sure what my question is, but it has something to do with your topic around perception and belief and right. being at peace with the experience and the healing process.
Right. Wow. Well, first off, whenever a question comes up in a public forum like this, that has to do with anything that has to do with medicine and diagnosis of medical conditions, I have to point out that I'm a spiritual teacher. I'm not a doctor. So I can't speak
yes.
with any kind of authority about, you know, nutrition or diagnosis or any of that. I can only give the perspective of someone who sees things always as a reflection of consciousness. The question yeah. I would ask you is, given that you have a perception that this is happening, but you are not the body to which this is happening, is there a sense of fear in you of this?
From that place, no. I know that I am eternal and that I'm in this world of form, all of which is all of which comes and goes.
Right. Okay. You're not in a world of form. You are aware of the world of form. It's a very mm-hmm. important distinction. We get the idea that somehow I was born into a form. That's not really accurate. That's not the real teaching of non-dual spirituality. Form mm-hmm. appears to the formless. The form never enters into the formless never enters into the form. Music never gets into the song and can't get out. Nor does music mm-hmm. suffer the fate of any particular form, of any particular song that gives it expression. Nor is it limited to it. So how this particular form appears, how it starts and how it goes, is kind of fulfilling itself. The destiny of the body and your destiny are not the same. It is not your destiny. And I would use that rather than say, well, I know this is because of the enlightenment. Don't make any kind of causal connection whatsoever. There's me,
mm-hmm.
and this is happening, right? There's me, and mm-hmm. this is going. And the me that you know, that me that is aware of it going on, is not in it. is aware of it but is not in it. And therefore, this is going on. Right? So you let that sense of I return back to consciousness, which is completely unaffected by what it is experiencing. It is no more affected by what it's experiencing than space is affected by the explosion of a galaxy. Entire galaxy could go obliterated, and it would have zero effect on space.
Mm-hmm.
Let your sense of identity go there, fully. Use this as an opportunity to be reminded you are not the body. You are not in the body. You are not subject to the body. And the body's destiny is not your destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can be enormously compassionate and simply say to the body, what do you need? But when you are completely disidentified with it, there will be no fear whatsoever, because the body doesn't know fear. Only the mind knows fear. Only a sense of self, the false sense of self, the sense of being a separate self, knows fear. The body's fearless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it reacts to the environment. You know, if it's being chased, it runs away. Right? That's the extent of it. Right? But even the word fear is superimposed. It's simply a physiological reaction that happens in the body, that it wants to get away from that thing. And that's the feeling. Then we turn that feeling into an entire array of psychological things. Right? And we call it fear, and then fear gets a story, and then fear becomes this thing in and of itself. But there's no real, there's no psychological fear in the body at all. None.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all a product of the mind, a project mm-hmm. of the mind. Right? So you are always free. You are always the immortal self. And I want you to take that in. Like, I know that I'm immortal, but I'm express. But drop everything. I know that I'm immortal. Then everything after that is an extra addition that doesn't need to be there, isn't needed.
Mm-hmm.
So just be with who you really are, and then let that wisdom and compassion simply do whatever needs to be done in the circumstance, because life is going to continue to go on. You know, the body is going to do what it needs to do, and it allows you to be really, really open and free, right? Because the body may have other alternative ways of dealing with the problem. It, mm-hmm. it may have a completely different diagnosis than the doctors do. It may have a completely different solution to it. And so you can listen to it. And I'm not saying don't do the doctors, of course. That would be irresponsible for me to say, right? You know, you're going the course that you know to go. But I would just really open myself up to what else is possible. What's actually going on here? Because I don't really know. And as you said, they are treating the symptoms. They're doing their best to find the cause. But they're basically treating the symptoms, because the you know, the actual cause could be so obscure and so distant that for the conscious human mind to be able to find a connection between it all is like impossible. You know, it's like you have a leak in your living room. The origin of the leak may be on the other side of the house. And it's just finally it's showing up here. So if you're just staring at there, you know, you may not see that the cause may be a million miles away. And ultimately, the cause is our belief in being a separate self. That's the cause of everything. It's the cause of all illness. So use it as an opportunity to become even more vehement about who you really are. And I don't mean vehement in an aggressive sort of way. I mean, just consistent sort of way. Because, you know, the mind doubts. The mind cannot perceive the real you, right? Because you're not, it's not an image. The real you is not an image. You're not a thing, an object that you can point to and say, there I am. You are clear, you are empty, you are open like space, you're pure presence. Therefore, it is unknowable to the mind. That's what they mean in the Hindu tradition, where they use the term Vedanta, which simply means the end of knowledge. You are beyond what can be known. You cannot be thought. Right? So any image you have of yourself isn't true. It's not really who you are. And so knowing yourself can't come from any self-image, can't come from any kind of conceptual interrogation. The way to know yourself is to simply be in touch with that which is not changing, which is that simple presence of being. That's you. And that's all there is to you. And that's always been there. It will never not be there. Now, as I'm speaking this, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling very settled and peaceful, and there's something very simple that you're inviting me to embrace. I'm maybe experiencing like a tendency to complexify what's actually going on and making up things and
8 billion of yes, it's what whenever we give it to our mind, all the mind can do is categorize, compare, describe, remember. That's what it does. Okay, so it has to deal with objects. There's nothing simpler than one, and one without a second has nothing to compare it to, so you can't conceive it. So it is the ultimate in simplicity. But your experience of it is all the time.
Yes.
So me speaking about it, I have to reduce it to certain ideas so I can point you in the right direction. Right? But, you know, the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. Right? Don't look at the finger, look at the moon.
Right.
It's very, very, it's the simplest of all. It's one. There's nothing simpler. You can't reduce one.
Yeah.
Indivisible, irreducible one. That's kind of it. Okay? So if you start there and recognize that everything that flows from there, even though it may get very, very complex, has its at its essence this simple truth that is animating it. So now what you're experiencing as the thoughts in the mind is not an attempt to find the truth. It becomes an expression of the truth. In Buddhism, they refer to that as the great pure mirror mind. It reflects truth. The mind in its purity reflects the truth. But when we feel separate, we use the mind to try to find it, not realizing that that which is trying to find it is it. The truth is not a thing grasped. The truth is you. Or as my favorite quote from St. Francis of Assisi, that which you are looking for is where you are looking from.
Yeah.
Where it. Go ahead.
Now, I feel intuitively drawn to a detox program, and I just feel intuitively.
Then you should.
You know, this is what's next.
Then do it. And do it 100%. Be completely devoted to it, you know. Don't cheat on the side. Just, you know, do it. Yeah. And if you're drawn to that, I mean, that's all you can do is trust the intuition. Once you know that none of this is actually touching you, there's no, the heaviness is gone, right? The risk is gone. It's like, oh my God, what if this doesn't work? Well, who cares? I mean, I'm trying it. This is what's coming up now. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So there's a freedom in that, because you're no longer seeking a certain set of consequences because there's fear involved. You're simply allowing yourself to be led intuitively. You're allowing things to unfold in the most wise way. That is wisdom, right? It is this oneness when it is expressed as many. When it animates the many, you get wisdom.
Yes.
When the many is existence, then you get ignorance and delusion and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Oneness is not the many goes away. The one you see is, they're not two. You can't differentiate anymore. They're the same.
Right.
The distinction you see is completely in the mind.
Yes. Now, there have been plenty of moments when I've been in extreme pain, you know, and crying, and also worrying about, my family, my parents, my sisters, and at the same time, there's this part of me that's witnessing mm-hmm. all of that.
Yes.
And it's witnessing from a place of no pain and no tears.
Yes.
Just that place of neutrality.
That's just continue to identify your sense of I with that.
Uh-huh.
And that will eventually completely usurp all the rest of it. I mean, the mind's going to want to draw you back into the story that you have about it. Oh, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
What's going to happen, everybody, right? And all the impact of it, it's all being generated by the mind based on the idea that you're a separate self. You're not that picture that it's showing you. You are that which is aware of it. And you've experienced it for real enough to know that as that, there's no pain there. There's no discomfort. There's mm-hmm. There's no fear. That's you. Just remember that's always you. And just let mm-hmm. yourself, and if you forget, just bring yourself back there as soon as you remember. Oh yeah, that's right. That's not me. This is me. And that's the story. And, it's all speculative. I have no idea. it's what the mind does. We've all been trained to imagine these scenarios, thinking somehow that's going to keep us safe and we're going to make things be able to be better if we can anticipate what's going to happen. And it's very, has a tiny little bit of truth to it. But for most things, we really don't know what's going to happen. Heck, I don't know where my next thought's going to be.
Yeah.
You are that perfect center. That's what you are. Period. End of story. That is
mm-hmm.
That is being, and you can tell the difference because that is not something you have to imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you have to think about. You don't have to think about that. It's what's doing the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's experiencing thought, every sensation, every feeling, everything is being experienced by that. And that is not an experience. It is not a thing. It is not an object of its own perception.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to close this out. I'm 1 minute left. So I want to thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing that up. And, please keep in touch.
Yes. I will. Thank you, GP.
Sure. Thanks, Bill. Wow.
Somebody
said, Moni, Manny Rosenberg, hey, Walsh, do you have questions? But I can't now because we're running out of time. we're beginning to close it out. So thank you all for being here. Thank you for once again. And I will be here next week with another show. You can send questions to questions@satsangwithchi. You can visit mhicourses.com to just check out the education that I have. And so that's it. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you next week.